Welcome, everyone, to the latest episode of the Pharmaceutical Commerce Podcast. I'm Nico Saraceno, Associate Editor of PC, and I'm here with Julian Upton, PharmComs Editor-in-Chief. We are pleased to be joined by Adam Yehya, Co-Founder and COO of DrugStock, a cloud-based pharmaceutical distribution platform that is working to empower healthcare providers across Africa by connecting manufacturers to hospitals and pharmacies. Today, among the various items on the agenda, he'll be diving into his inspiration for founding the company and the logistical obstacles that come with distribution. Adam, thank you for joining Julian and I today. We really do appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you so much, Nico. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks, Adam. And I'm Julian, as Nico introduced me. I just want to start with asking you about DrugStock and the backstory to that and how you and your colleague, co-founder, Chibutsu Opara, how you got about getting that off the ground.
I guess this all started in 2009. I'm born and raised in Nigeria, and so is Chi. But at that time, we met in Holland. He was doing his PhD in health systems while I was doing my master's in health service innovation. We met on a specific day and just hit it off with both bonding over the challenges that we faced in the healthcare sector before we moved to pursue our degrees further. And a lot of it was entrenched in the despair that we had for the healthcare system in sub-Saharan Africa and how we understood that the talent and the youth is there, but the infrastructure and the system itself is not working. So I've always also been into technology from quite a young age. I was inspired by my brother-in-law, which is a big techie. And as soon as I came back to Nigeria after my master's, I ran a bunch of hospitals and primary healthcare centers while Chibuzo pursued a job with the IFC and the World Bank and health policy and health regulation in and out. But we made a promise to ourselves back in Maastricht in Holland that we would tackle the relevant issues that we found in the healthcare space that would leapfrog the African healthcare space within our lifetime, because a lot of the things and the progress that we were seeing, the effect of it will not even be felt by my children. So from that perspective, we were the first, I'm not going to say the first in Nigeria, but the first, as far as I'm aware, to agree to create a company that brought technology developers, web developers, and app developers, and essentially put them in the same room with pharmacists, doctors, and everybody in the healthcare space in a small hospital in Nigeria. The purpose of this was essentially to blend the thought process of how healthcare professionals think and operate with the tech guys that were up and coming at that scene, because a lot of the technology innovation we were seeing was not specific to healthcare, although we were seeing advances in fintech and in banking and in e-commerce, but a lot of the developers didn't quite understand, or the founders didn't quite understand how healthcare works. So part of that experiment we had at Integra Health, the first company we founded together, came up with a bunch of solutions for the market. But every solution that we came up with, from HMIS systems to antenatal SMS pregnancy tracking, they really didn't have the impact that we were looking for in terms of leapfrogging the system itself. So we looked back to see what the major challenges for me in the hospital were in terms of healthcare provision. And there were two major challenges there. One was the fact that Africa has a serious brain drain. It means our top talent is essentially, they leave the country for better opportunities. And the second major issue was, how do we source commodities? Everything from the drugs that we need to the consumables to the surgical blade. And my experience in the sector essentially taught me that you either have to spend 3 weeks dealing with 500 reps to get 2,000 SKUs, and each one is sporadic and not really consistent with his delivery and quality, or we would have to go to something we have in Africa called an open drug market, which is essentially a flea-like market whereby you have lots of small wholesalers and vendors and middlemen, or you would have to contact a middleman. Now, the problem with that is that the intransparency in pricing, the inconsistency of products, the counterfeit issue anywhere between 10 and 40% of all drugs in sub-Saharan Africa are considered counterfeit or substandard. So we thought the status quo was not acceptable. And we started Drugstock on that basis of connecting pharmaceutical companies directly to the consumer. We did a project in beta whereby we connected wholesalers that had already been accredited or existing down to the consumer. But the problem is that the supply chain was so broken that even these wholesalers went to the market to buy. So after our pilot and all these findings, we decided that this was something that would leapfrog the African healthcare sector fundamentally and learned a lot from our mistakes of just executing a tech-only platform, especially in emerging economies like Nigeria, and pivoted and started the company in 2017.
We're curious, Adam. What is your reach across the African continent, specifically across countries with many different health and access challenges?
I think Africa cannot be looked at as one landscape. I think we need to take a look at the difference between Anglophone and Francophone influenced countries and how they operate and their laws. But generally speaking, Africa as a whole has a drug access and supply problem. You see it less in countries, North African countries like Egypt, but the further you go south, the more the issue is exacerbated. So in terms of when we started with 20 facilities. So these were around 16 pharmacies and four hospitals that essentially had faith in what we were doing. And that was in 2017 or 2016 ending. And we covered then with these 20 facilities around a patient pool of maybe 60,000 people. Since then, we've grown to, in 2020, we covered around 18 million people. In 2021, that went to around 34 million people in terms of coverage space, whereby any healthcare provider attending to these pools can order and get accessible products. And we intend to, by 2024, be at 150 million benchmark. So what we're doing there is expanding sustainably, because we do not want to fall into the trap of IT solves all infrastructural challenges, but at the same time, we don't want to fall for the brick and mortar approach that has not worked for Africa. So with that ambition, we intend to ensure that every healthcare provider, as long as you're licensed to practice healthcare in Africa and underserved population in terms of the ratio of healthcare providers to the population, we intend to ensure that we empower you to have every single item that you need for your patient, for your practice, for your surgery going forward. So we have pretty ambitious plans. And I think our plans are not just based on our individual ambitions, but in general, an approach to really change the narrative in the healthcare environment that we grew up in, that we are professionals in. We believe that the youth of Africa are miles ahead of the leaders of Africa at this crux in time. And we intend to ensure that that talent and that innovation is present in Africa in the next 5 to 10 years.
So you've touched a lot about the challenges that you faced in Nigeria and obviously lots of different challenges across the continent. You might want to sort of focus on Nigeria, if you like, in Zanzibar, but how are you actually overcoming those distribution challenges? Could you sort of give us a bit more detail about how you're actually connecting those pharma manufacturers to hospitals and pharmacies to the end user?
Sure. So I'll start with just landscaping Africa for your listeners. One, there's a power situation. So there's a lack of infrastructure with power. So when it comes to things like distributing cold chain, unless you're innovating on an international level, you would run into severe cost issues and problems with maintaining your system. We at Drugstock are going fully solar for our cold chain, and we're using lithium ion batteries, similar to the technology, for example, Elon uses in his cars, to ensure that we have a sustainable cold chain infrastructure that's independent of the power grid, but yet sustainable and cost effective. The other infrastructural challenges that you face are generally the hyper congestion of the city areas and the lack of infrastructure in terms of road networks that can easily allow us to, say, distribute the product to any region that we intend to. And unlike the US, where Amazon was able to piggyback off US postal services or other countries that the infrastructure is there for startups like us to essentially scale with, we don't necessarily have those things here available to us to scale. So for the issue of remote areas and places that are not just accessible, because I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but there's around 40 million people in Nigeria that their villages or towns are not accessible directly by good roads in any way. So we, in the past few months, have also partnered with Zipline. I don't know if you guys have heard of Zipline. They're a drone delivery company based out of the US that have several projects in Africa. We're big fans. We've always been big fans.
I profiled somebody who had an alliance with Zipline just a few weeks ago. Nico, do you remember? It was just like one of the first things I did when I came to Farmcom. So that's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. And I know they do a lot of work with the big logistics companies like UPS, and I know they've had collaborations with them in the past. So that's pretty incredible.
Yeah. So we're essentially working together to reach the ultimate last mile and just ensuring that as we expand, despite the infrastructural challenges, we use innovation and technology to plug it. But the most important thing here is that we need a lean system, right? We can't afford to spend as much as developed countries would with more institutionalized financial systems or health insurance systems that are able to take up the costs. So we are working with them and state governments to ensure that the communities that are hard to reach by drug stocks, vehicles, or technology are reached by their drones going forward. So there are several infrastructural challenges and several ways to deal with them. I think the lesson to take here is that you have to be forward-thinking, innovative, but at the same time, be very cost-conscious and culture-conscious as well.
Of course, cost plays a huge role in this entire process. And I know on your website has cited that 80% of healthcare in Nigeria is financed by out-of-pocket payments by the patient. So using some of these supply chain innovations, Adam, how would you say that drug stock is working to help reduce those payment burdens for the patient? How are you guys lessening the blow, so to speak, for them?
Okay, so let me blow your mind with something basic. Because of the lack of distribution and the lack of infrastructure to allow for that distribution, or the lack of companies like us that have been institutionalized over the past couple of decades, what you're seeing is that an average drug in Nigeria can cost anywhere between 3 times to 64 times the international market price. And why does that happen? And please, let's also consider the fact that this is some of the poorest populations in the world that are paying 60 times what you would pay for a drug in order to access it. And we have to understand why that is happening. When you don't have distribution networks that allow people to access these things, you create the space for lots of middlemen and business traders that take advantage of these situations. So where, for example, there's scarcity in anti-cancer medication in some remote village, the only person that's available within 6 to 8 hours, it's pretty much at liberty to put any price he wants because it's just a commodity based on supply and demand. So what we've seen over the past couple of decades is that, especially in countries in sub-Saharan Africa and in West Africa, is that the advent of lots of middlemen, lots of people that trade, that essentially take the money from the end user, do not pump it back into the pharmaceutical innovation aspect. So it means if a drug was priced at $10 and the pharma company was making $8, at least the $8 would go into research and innovation about how to expand products. But then you have this bleeding system whereby the patient pays exorbitant prices, the manufacturer or the pharmaceutical industry is not benefiting from that exorbitant pricing. It should not benefit from that exorbitant pricing, especially in sub-Saharan Africa. But the idea is that you have lots of cash bleeding out of the system into these informal traders and people that are essentially the gateway. So even without going into supply chain technology or the 10 other things that we do, just ensuring that the price of a drug is standardized across many cities in Nigeria and having the infrastructure and the access points in order to create that awareness and that benchmarking, I think is part of the ways that we solve that issue. Even somebody in a remote area having access to what the drug price is from drug stock, even if he did not want to buy that drug, can simply know that he can use it as a tool to negotiate with these internal or middlemen that are interfacing with them. Now, in terms of pricing in general for the public, we also have to understand that this system is not going to work unless you do have some sort of pool of cash in healthcare that is coming from the insurance pool. Currently, I'd say around 4 to 5% of Nigerians are under fixed manage insurance. But in the last 2 years, we've been working with several innovative companies in the health insurance space that have been able to cover primary and secondary healthcare for an individual for as low as $7 a month. So we anticipate that there's going to be a tremendous growth in the amount of people that are covered under this, although there's some cultural nuances that we have to also factor in terms of health insurance not being a common worry for an average sub-Saharan African that is trying to put food on the table or send his kid to school. But I think the advent of that is also going to help alleviate a bit of this issue. The third aspect is dropping the access or the barrier for how a patient or how expensive it is for a patient to access healthcare. This is happening with lots of telemedicine vendors that we're supporting. It's happening also with the advent of AI in primary healthcare and secondary healthcare that can hopefully use the 30,000 doctors we have in Nigeria to cater to 200 million people that we have in Nigeria, which is a tremendous task. So I think the more healthcare becomes accessible and the more distribution networks and access points like Drugstock are made available, I think that generally is going to pull the price down significantly for the end consumer. There's a final aspect of things is that products that are really too expensive to even stock at a pharmacy, certain biologicals, anti-cancer medication, we should be able to create a system whereby the consumer is able to purchase these things and pay instrumentally, or at least get some rebates back from the system itself or from the government itself through a sustainable system that is trackable and traceable.
I was working on PharmExec magazine before this, and so we do a lot of talk about, or we did a lot of articles about emerging markets, and then we called them pharmerging markets, and of course
pharmerging markets.
Pharmerging was a buzzword for a while, and of course Nigeria featured on those lists very much, and other parts of sub-Saharan Africa as these huge, potentially largely expanding markets and ones to look out for. First, I would ask you, what is that situation like now in terms of Nigeria as a growth economy? And also in terms of the health tech, is that somewhere where Nigeria is likely to catch up, take over the West? I know in some respects you had to leapfrog the West.
That's a great question. And I think my answer is going to be twofold here. So there is some aspects of the healthcare system that we're definitely going to leapfrog and are currently leapfrogging. And you're going to see the effects of this happen in the next couple of years. These aspects of healthcare tend to address primary healthcare and basic secondary healthcare. So for your listeners that are not familiar with that terminology, it's essentially everything from seeing your GP to minor surgeries like an appendectomy or hernias and things like that. I think that is going to extremely improve in the next couple of years. And I think those are the low-hanging fruits for us in the sense that we can use telemedicine, AI, good supply chains, scalable technology in terms of HMIS systems and how they integrate the info back to the consumer. And even consumer health technologies like at-home monitoring and things like that are going to change the name of the game in terms of how people access basic healthcare, which is if I'm sick, I need to get a doctor's opinion or I need to be admitted into the hospital for something minor. I think we're going to see Africa catch up and maybe even surpass the quality that you tend to get in the West because of the fact that we are innovating from really a non-existent landscape per se. So we're able to try out new technologies and adopt new technologies a lot faster than emerging economies. But my hesitation, so I'm very bullish on the fact that we need to change the narrative and we have the ability to change the narrative for primary and secondary healthcare. Now, when it comes to precision medicine, genomics, complicated surgeries, transplants, anti-cancer treatment, oncology in general, I think those things, I'm yet to be convinced that what we're doing currently is sufficient enough to change the narrative in the next decade. I think the infrastructure challenges we have there, the talent drain that we have there is significant. I think also because health insurance does not cover more than 4 to 5% and it's out-of-pocket payments for these things. So when you tend to hear the cost of an open heart surgery in Nigeria or a complicated procedure in Nigeria, it usually factors in the lack of talent that stays in Nigeria and the flying in of expertise or whatever the case may be. So I think in that aspect, we need to think a bit more systematically about how to approach these issues. We need the African diaspora, which is pretty strong in terms of the healthcare field globally. I think we need to get them a bit more involved in how we operate these things. I mean, some countries have a...
We need to stop taking your doctors, right, in the NHS, right? Maybe we need to stop taking your doctors and nurses and you know, because we have an influx, of course, of great talent from...
I don't think that that decision is within your control. I think it's the factor of your economic position and your status as a country. But I think why... Isn't Africa using the same philosophy to, for example, if we have a lack of doctors in Nigeria, why don't I have Botswanan and Zambian doctors or from pools that I can even tap into, perhaps even Indian doctors or anything like that? But I think we need to have an open mind as to how we approach the system. And I think we need to use the next 20 years to train the infrastructure while we develop the financial tools to ensure that these people are being able to pay well.
Definitely some food for thought there. And your growth in the last 3 years has certainly been exponential. And I know you began to touch upon it earlier in our chat, but are you hoping to continue at that pace? And how exactly are you planning to further extend your business?
When we say exponential, our growth has been exponential. I guess I'll take that. Thank you for the compliment. But I think we did everything we did in the past 3 years was based on just Chi and I's pure grit and very basic seed funding. We just closed a Series A round a couple of months ago. So I would expect and not expect, I know there's going to be an acceleration in that growth. And there's so much untapped potential. So let me use Nigeria alone. So Nigeria's formal pharma sector is capped at around $3 billion a year. There is tremendous potential to occupy more and more of that trade in specifically Nigeria. Talk less about the rest of the sub-Saharan African countries that also have a need for this access point in general. So I think we're excited for the plans and the rollouts that we're going to have in the upcoming 12 months. I think a lot of the technology has been developed in-house and has been piloted in-house with a small group of people. And I'm not talking about the technology that already exists on Drugstock platform, like our access points and our apps and our ways to essentially purchase and order and get access into our system. But I'm talking about more innovative products that we've been working on to plug into this system for the past 2 years. And I think now is the time to kind of push that infrastructure out. So expect to see a lot more innovative things coming out from us. Expect to see our geographical expansion and coverage grow aggressively. And don't forget that pharma companies find it very difficult to interact with the African market. And we intend to ensure that they have a reliable partner that is ISO certified internationally for good distribution practices, that uses technology, can leverage off data, can give them an accurate snapshot. But most importantly, we're able to track and trace every single pack of drug that they put through our system, through our technology, and ensure that if they do have a problem with any batch of drugs, that we can recall that batch effectively, unlike the way things are the status quo now. Because of the sporadic distribution and the open drug markets, it's really hard to trace where the $10 million of a certain import is. So I'm excited for the future. I think Chi and I are privileged to be given this opportunity to turn our passion into a reality. And I think we're all going to be better for it if we are successful. Rather, when we are successful enough to be a nine-figure company.
We're certainly excited to see the developments that you alluded to, Adam, and to see how that shapes up in these next few years. So thank you so much for coming on to share your knowledge, to share the story of Drugstock and just the plans that you have moving forward. It's very enlightening and informative. So we really do appreciate you taking the time today.
Thank you very much, guys.
Absolutely. And for all you listeners, be sure to stay in the loop of our latest updates via our website at pharmaceuticalcommerce.com or on our SoundCloud page. Take care, everyone.